Now we'll go through some techniques this afternoon, and more techniques tomorrow and for the rest of the training, brand new techniques. But before that, we'd like to share with you some interesting stories, and those stories are not metaphors.
These are not metaphors.
One of the exceptional metaphors we found is in the book In Search of the Miraculous by Ouspensky.
Ouspensky was one of the major players in spirituality in the Western world as far back as the beginning of the 20th century.
He worked together with...
Oh, you would ask me that, wouldn't you? He worked together with Gurdjieff. Yeah. I knew that. And Gurdjieff and Ouspensky wrote a number of books together as well as separately.
Now, Gurdjieff's theory about the state of consciousness of human race is very interesting because he says that most of humans live life as they were asleep, as in a state of almost like hypnotic sleep.
Now, we said this, I think, in your practitioner. We said, when the client comes to see you, the client's in a trance, but it's his trance. It's a trance without rapport with you. This is the state of sleep that most people exist in, according to Ouspensky.
And so, according to Ouspensky, there is an Eastern tale which speaks of a very rich entrepreneur who had, that's in ancient times, who had many sheep.
He was a sheep herder.
And he did not want to hire shepherds to take care of his flock.
Here's the problem with shepherds. You got to do tax withholding. You've got to get unemployment compensation. You got to plan for their retirement. I mean, and then there's the management of sub-shepherds.
Too much trouble. Now, he didn't want to erect a fence either, well, because that would cost a lot of money.
Fence would cost a lot of money. He didn't want a fence in the territory because he felt like, I mean, he was sort of a free spirit, and he felt like the sheep ought to be able to roam free. But the problem with that was...
The problem was that sheep ran away all the time.
Because the sheep, in spite of the fact you would think they wouldn't know, he began to think that they knew what was going on.
So they knew that the sheep herder wanted actually their flesh and their skins. And they didn't like that. So they would run away all the time.
In fact, many times he saw them huddling, you know? And they'd be going like this. Am I next? I wonder. Let's split you and me. We'll get the hell out of here.
You know, Bill was around until yesterday, but yesterday...
Where did Bill go?
Where did he go?
And they look around, the sheep, and they look at the... Sheep would be rather wide-eyed looking around. Because where did Bill go?
Now, what did the guy do?
This guy was a radical thinker, our sheep herder.
Our sheep herder do.
Well, you know what would happen if all the sheep left? Yeah? No sheep.
So he brought them all together, and he started telling them.
He devised a very good plan. And what he said was, he didn't talk to the sheep individually.
He talked to them as a big group.
Bigger group as he could get. Bigger than this group.
Much bigger. Much bigger, much bigger, much bigger. Amounts of thousands and thousands and thousands of sheep.
Because this guy had a lot of sheep.
And he said to them, first of all, that they were immortal. No harm will come to them ever. And in fact, the process of being skinned alive is very pleasant.
It actually is good for you.
And very good for you. And secondly, he suggested to them that... He was as their master, he was ready to do anything for them.
He said, I would do, as your leader, he said, I would do anything for you to make sure that you, you know, live a full, fulfilling sheep life.
In a third place,
the sheep were very impressed.
He suggested to them that if anything at all were to happen to them, definitely it will be later. It was not going to happen just
then. It wouldn't happen right now.
And definitely not that day. And therefore, they had no need to think about it anymore.
Further, he suggested to...
Some of them.
By name. He said, you know what? You're not really sheep at all.
You are lions.
Some of you are lions.
Or you're eagles.
And you can fly.
Or you're magicians.
And the sheep who thought they were magicians thought, wow,
I'm important.
And you know what happened? This is so interesting.
all his worries about sheep came to an end.
Because the sheep, having been, shall we say, nurtured into this world where they would be cared for, no longer ran away.
In fact, they never ran away again.
He didn't lose a single sheep.
But quietly awaited the time when the sheep herder would require their skin and their flesh. And quietly waited there to be slaughtered.
One day, when I was in California, I got invited to a sweat lodge. Now, I'd never been to a sweat lodge. Anybody ever been to a sweat lodge? It's kind of interesting. And I was invited to the sweat lodge with a couple of friends of mine. And I'm a pretty spiritual guy, and this is Native American. Sweat lodge is where you go. And you know what? I'd taken saunas before.
Yeah, me too.
I had taken saunas before. I thought, because I used to live in Wisconsin, you know. We used to go on the weekend. We used to go to the sauna, bring a six-pack of beer, drink a six-pack of beer, sit in the sauna and sweat a lot, and go out and get drunk, go out and roll in the snow, and then go home. That's about all there was to do in Wisconsin.
You had a great time.
Had a great time. So I thought, hey, a sweat lodge, that'll be a piece of cake, because I used to go to the sauna all the time. So I was prepared, you know. And the guy said, you know, wear some cool clothing. I said, okay, no problem. So I drove way back up in this valley to find the place where the sweat lodge was. And there were a couple of Native American guys there, and I was with another Native American guy. And we went into this low tent. The tent was very low. It's called an inipi, which is a low teepee, small tent. Yeah. And in the middle of the thing, and I get inside there, and it's kind of dark in the sweat lodge. But I go inside, and I look, and there's a big hole in the middle. And I thought, wow, that's pretty cool. And I asked the head guy, I said, What's that for? And he said, that's the pit. I went, whoa. What's the pit for? He said, we're going to bring in some lava rocks. And I went, lava rocks? Cool, because in Hawaii, you know, what we do is we cook pigs in the sand, dig a hole in the sand, put down tea leaves, and then TI plant, and then you put lava rocks inside the pig, and
inside.
You bury the pig.
Cooks from inside.
And it cooks from inside, and it's just moist, and it's just delightful pig. And I thought, lava rocks, just little bitty lava rocks. I thought, that's very cool. Well, that's how they're going to heat up the sweat lodge. That'll be fun. I said, that'll be good. That'd be kind of like a sauna. I can handle that. So the guy said, yeah, just some lava rocks. He said, it took us quite a while to get these. He said, but we always use lava. I went, good. And so they brought, he said, now, he flipped open the door and he yells outside, bring in the first 8 rocks. And I thought, 8 rocks? It's kind of small. But okay, you know, start off slow. It'll be cool. And these two guys come dragging with metal tongs a rock that was half the size of these guys. So as they came into the inipi, the rock is up to here. And they're dragging it in with these gigantic tongs, and it's glowing red. And I went, oh, shit. Oh, my God. And then he brought another one, and another one, and another one, and another one. And then I don't remember how many there are now, but there were 8. Now, the pit's pretty full, and it gets hot in there. I'm a spiritual guy. But, you know, just before I went into the sweat lodge, the guy said to me, you know what? He said, Tad, if you're a wimp. And I went to myself, I'm not a wimp. He said, if you're a wimp, you can call for the door to be opened. But I'm a spiritual guy, and I thought, no, I won't need that. I've been to a sauna bath before. So here I am sitting there, and they brought in their 8 rocks. And I thought, wow, this is going to be fun. And he closes the And he closes the door of the Anipi. And then it starts to get hot. And I went, thanks. It's getting pretty hot. And I thought, wow, that's something, isn't it? And now what we went, what we did is, the first thing we had to do is we had to describe our fears. And we went all around the circle. I remember it very well. Because I was over here, and then around the sweat lodge were other people here, and then over there was the guy that was running the thing. And then up there was the last guy next to him. And then, but over here there was a Native American guy, and then a couple other people who I didn't know. And I had a friend up at the top. So we go around the circle. So the head guy, Native American, also starts talking. He says, I have this fear and this fear and this fear. And he passed it on to the next guy. Next guy's next to him. That was fine. And on we went. And I, then it came to me. Now, I'm a man of brevity. I chunk up. I mean, let's face it. So I said, you know, I've got fears, but I got rid of them with timeline therapy, and on to the next guy. And we get over here to this Native American guy. You know, I didn't realize there was so much fear in the world, not only in the world, but in a person. I mean, this guy was, he listed every fear I'd ever thought of or ever heard of, and then he listed a few more. Did I tell him to chunk up?
Did you tell him to chunk up?
No. You know why? Because he didn't know. So here he is, and he's writing a book. And I thought, well, that's okay. But then all of a sudden, I realized, I'm pretty hot. I'm pretty hot. In fact, it was hotter than any sauna that I've ever been in. I mean, it was getting real hot, and my heart was beating, ba-boom, ba-boom, ba-boom. And I'm there, and oh, and every time somebody said something that was good, the Native American guy had a little bucket, and he would dip some kind of a ladle in the bucket, and he'd throw water on the rocks.
And every time the water would be on the rocks.
And when the water hit the rocks, it would go, squish, and all the steam would go up into the place. So here's this Native American guy talking, and I didn't know that he wanted specificity. This guy over here wanted specificity, so he's talking, and every now and then the guy goes, yeah! Now it's not just hot, it starts to get humid. And it starts to get really humid, and now the sweat is pouring off my forehead. And finally this guy's done. I thought, geez, I mean, you know, could you like chunk up a little bit? And it goes around to my friends, and they're pretty brief because we're Americans. And then around to the native guy, and he says, now we're going to talk about our ancestors. And okay, ancestors. Comes around to me. I grew up in a small family. I'm an only child. I got my mom, dad, and me, and that's it. I'm the next person. Now, when I got over to the Native American guy, I'm a man of brevity. He was a man of how long can you talk? Plus, he had 1,300 uncles who he named by name. And Uncle Bill, who lives in Phoenix, and Uncle George.
Did he mention their children?
Yes, all their children. And meanwhile, the guy goes, yeah, psh, all the water right onto the fire. Now it's getting hotter than hell. And all of a sudden, I realize that the water is streaming down my face. And it's streaming down my face so much that I can't see anything. Now, you wouldn't think that this, from your eyebrows to the top of your head, could produce so much water that it would close your eyes. No, it did. It produced so much water that my eyes are closed, and it's running down my body like this. I look down, and I'm sitting in a pool of my own sweat. And the water is running off so much, so I have to take my hand and put it up against my forehead just to be able to look across and see, when did that guy shut up? And I'm like, I'm there. And it's like, I and my Aunt Mary, I mean, give me a break. Just talk about your mom and dad. And finally, he's done, and it gets around to the Native American guy who's leading the thing, and he says, very good, open the door. And I went, whew. Man, that's lucky, I said. That was a good sweat lodge. And he opened the door and he said, bring in the next 8 rocks. And I went, oh, shit, I'm going to die now. I'm dead. I'm sure I'm dead. And they closed the door and my heart's going like this. And I'm like, I can hear it in my head. Not only that, but I can feel it running through the veins of my temple is how hot it is. It's going, and I can't hear a thing from these guys. I don't even know what he said, but I'm a man of brevity. When it got to me, I said it quick, fast, and short. And he said, what are all the things you're thankful for? And I said, I'm thankful for the ancient teachings and timeline therapy, and went on to the next person because I'm a man of brevity. Now, it got over to the Native American guy. I mean, like, how many is he writing an encyclopedia of all the things to be happy for? He said, I'm happy for the sun and the moon and the pieces of dirt and the sand and the wind and all the plant. Oh, I'm so thankful for all of this. And I'm like, oh, my God, I'm going to die. Meanwhile, my head's going like this. And I figured, well, you know what? I'm dead. I'm totally dead. If I drop dead here, and I thought, well, wait, if I drop dead here, I'd probably go right up to the gods because this is a great place. I mean, it's a spiritual place. I'm a spiritual guy. If I drop dead here, great, I'm done. And it goes, he's still talking. Can't hear a word he's saying. Happy for the. And I'm like, wait a minute. I can't hear a thing gets around here. I'm still going like this. The pool of water around me is incredible. Every bit of my being is totally soaked. I was wearing a t-shirt and shorts. They're totally soaked. I'm absolutely soaked. I'm sitting in a pool of water, and he's done. We're over to this guy, and he says, now the fourth thing that I like it is, now I don't even remember what he said, but I'm a man of brevity. He got to me, and I said, thanks very much. On to the next guy. He's still talking, and he's going like this. And I'm blah, 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 blah. I couldn't hear a thing. I absolutely couldn't hear a thing. I said, I'm going to die, 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 I'm going to die right here. I'm going to die right here. And if I die right here, how do I get out of here? If I die right here, well, wait. No, maybe I will die. Maybe I won't die. What if I don't die? Well, if I don't die, I'll be okay. But if I do die, my brain went nuts. And then all of a sudden, I leaned over, and something happened because I went beyond all of my resources. And I reached down way deep inside me, and I pulled up something I had no idea was there. I pulled up my connection to the earth, and I had no idea that that was there. And I wouldn't have had an idea it was there unless I got pushed way beyond my boundaries. I was so far beyond my boundaries, I had no idea where they were. And I'm actually thankful to the Native American guy who was writing a book, because if we'd had any shorter sweat lodge, I wouldn't have gotten through it. So during this training, we're gonna push you a little bit. During this training, we're going to push you a little bit, and we're going to push you beyond your boundaries, I hope. There are several exercises designed to push you beyond your comfort zone and to push you beyond what you thought was possible.
There are several exercises in this training which will hopefully allow you to realize there is much more than what you can see with your eyes. In fact, there's been an experiment, very interesting experiment, and they were college kids part of this experiment.
College kids will do anything, by the way. That's why they experiment on them.
They're curious. They're ready to go. Curious, like, experiment. Let's do it now. And so what I did, they asked the college kids to wear a certain form of glasses.
Glasses.
To which all the reality appeared upside down. Everything they saw outside was upside down.
So the glasses just turned the picture over, which, by the way, is the right way inside your brain, because your brain flips the picture over anyway.
So,
and I wanted to find what happened if we normally flipped it over so it was the right way.
So the kids were required to wear those glasses every moment of their being awake. And surprisingly, after 2 days of them wearing the glasses, the brain flipped the image. So even while wearing the glasses, they could see normally, and the image was normal.
And the brain flipped the picture to the normal way.
But then, when they took the glasses off, all the kids had the image upside down. And it took them another 2 days for the brain to reverse the image once more. So if you think that what you see is what it is,
think again.
Think again. First of all, what you see is reverted, and the image that's reflected at the backside of your eye on the retina is upside down. Then that image is converted in electrical information, neuroelectrical information that goes to your brain and is analyzed by the optic side of your brain. And in fact, what is outside bears almost no resemblance to what you analyze inside.
It's true. What really is outside actually bears no resemblance to what you experience as being inside. And the thing is, it's all done in your brain. It's all done in your brain. So, and this is interesting. Your brain actually changes things around so that the perceptions are normal.
If you're curious to know more about this, we recommend you the book Mega Brain by Michael Hutchinson. There's a story in this book, among other interesting things, and that's been a person who lived a normal life. I think it was just about the beginning of last century. Lived an absolutely normal life, had a normal family, had a normal job, and died happily. And this person had a friend.
Actually, two kids. Had a 120 IQ, normal IQ, had two kids, a great job, lived his entire life.
His friend being normally a medical doctor.
And his friend did an autopsy.
Did an autopsy on him. And what he found is that this person virtually had no brain.
When they cut open the skull, there was no brain in there.
All he had the brain stem, of course. And inside, instead of brain, was a liquid.
So it's just liquid, all water in his brain.
Now, nobody ever told him that he's supposed to be brainless.
This is around the turn of the century, and nobody ever told him he was... nobody ever knew. And so nobody said to him, we'll take care of you, you poor thing, you don't have a brain.
So you've got this...
You've got no brain, therefore
label.
We'll take care of you. Nobody told him. So he lived an entire full life.
And he had a normal, happy life.
Now, I know you know people like this. Aren't there... How many people have friends who have no brains? Anybody? Yeah, now here's the thing. I don't care what you've been dealt with. This guy lived an entire full life, was a successful business person, lived his entire life full and complete, and he had no brain. Zero brain. And yet he lived an entire life and nobody told him. That's very, very important. Think about it.
See, he never adopted the belief he's not supposed to have a good, happy life. Therefore, he did.
He had a good, happy life. Think about that for a moment. Because what happens? Oh, this is really important. What happens? What happens if we convince somebody that they have a good, happy life by whatever means? So I got to tell you guys a story. Do you mind if I tell you a story? So this is so funny. I had a woman, she came to Master Track. She went through the entire master practitioner training in California. And she went through the whole thing, practitioner, master practitioner, and she was good. She was good. At the end of the thing, she raised her hand. And I said, yes. And she said, Dad, I just want to tell you something. I said, what? She said, I'm a diagnosed multiple personality, and I almost fell off my chair. She said, I'm a diagnosed multiple personality, and my psychiatrist sent me to take this training with you because as a multiple personality, he had really had no idea what to do with me. And she says, now I've sat with you, and I thought, oh, here it comes. I'm going to get slammed now because I'm so radical. I'm just in big trouble. And she says, I've sat with you for 3 weeks. I said, yes, and I appreciate it very much. And she said, I've sat with you for 3 weeks. I listened to your practitioner training. I listened to your CDs. I sat with you for the entire master practitioner training, and now it's the last day of master practitioner training. She said, I've decided something I just wanted to tell you. I said, what did you decide? She said, I've decided I'm not a multiple personality. She said, I'm fucked up, but I'm not a multiple personality. I'm screwed up, but I'm not a multiple personality. What would happen? Now, think about this for just a minute. Think about this for just a minute. Because I had a guy in a training. I had a guy in a training, and we were in Cleveland. Cleveland. Got to be the most exciting place in the United States. And it's a small training, intimate, 21 people. That's a small training for me, just 21 people. We're sitting around doing The Secret of Creating Your Future. And we start doing anger, or it might have been sadness. And in the past, I wasn't as observant as I could have been. And this guy walks up to me when I first get into the training, and he goes, Dad. I went, yes? He said, yesterday, I was bleeding from the eyes. And I went, okay, no problem. I said, I looked at his eyes. I said, your eyes look pretty good. You'll be okay. And I went on. I wouldn't have missed it today, but back then I missed it. So we start letting go of anger, and all of a sudden he goes like this. And I went, that's a little more drama than I usually experience in my trainings from people other than me. And and so at the first break, I went up to him and I said, how's it going? He said, he goes like this. He goes, wow. And I said, well, you know what? He said, what? I said, you're acting out a little more. In this training, I said, you're acting out a little more than we normally have in trainings. And I said, so you and I have to have a discussion. He said, oh. I said, first of all, I said, you're here for a reason. And he goes, well, I know I'm here for a reason. He said, but I didn't know you knew. And I said, well, I do. You're here for a reason. I said, and you're here to get something from this training. He went, yes. I said, some information. He said, yes. I said, and they're going to kick your ass if you don't get it. And he goes, you're right, they are. He said, what am I going to do? I said, well, you can stay. But what I'd like you to do is be a model citizen from now on. So I'd like you, from this moment forward, to pretend that you're totally, totally sane. And I looked at him and winked and I said, that's what I do. And he goes, whoa! Okay. By the way, from that moment on, he was a model citizen. The interesting thing about psychotics is, by the way, is we find that they can actually control their behavior if given a reason big enough to. Now, here's a question for you. Let's say we have somebody who's totally diagnosed as clinically bonkers, which is a diagnosis, by the way, in the DSM-4-RX, yeah? That's the revised extended version. And that's the diagnostic manual of the American Psychiatric Association. So what happens if we have somebody come to us for therapy, and by whatever means we possibly can, including what I did with this guy, what if that person changes his behavior, his external behavior, not his internal state or anything, but his external behavior, such that he never ever talks to anybody about anything about his pathology again, and he pretends to be sane such that the pretense transforms his behavior and he never produces any symptomology of that again, is he clinically insane anymore? And the answer is no, he's not. By definition, if he changes his behavior, he's not clinically insane. So your job as a master practitioner of neuro-linguistic programming, if you're caught, by the way, will disavow any knowledge of who you are in the impossible force. The impossible force will disavow that you are here for this intensive training. Your job, should you choose to accept it, is to begin to pretend that you can do anything, that you can have anything, that you can create anything that you want.